Janie Lee Grace. Welcome to the Natural Health and Sobriety Show on UK Health Radio. Hi, and welcome to the podcast. I'm going to rerun an interview that I did quite a long time ago on this show. And the reason is because there's been even more research from this same researcher. And I figured that, you know, rather than ask her to come on this show again, I would rerun this piece because everything that's been said in this article, you know, still stands true. And the reason I wanted to share it particularly now is because there was a piece in the press literally this week, and the headline was, "However much you drink, you're at risk of dementia." Quite hard hitting, isn't it? And it really did make it absolutely clear. It was a big study, and they looked at the amount that people drank, and unsurprisingly, those that were drinking high levels were, you know, massively at risk of developing dementia, and those that drank moderate amounts were also, you know, at risk. But what the study showed conclusively was that any amount of alcohol, any amount at all, increases your risk of dementia. So these studies that we see from time to time saying that drinking moderate amounts of alcohol is actually beneficial, I'm sorry, but it's just not true. And I know they would love it to be true. Certainly the alcohol companies that tend to fund this research absolutely want it to be true, that we believe this BS that a glass of red wine is good for the heart. It isn't. If you really want something beneficial for heart health, then you'd be having, you know, food and fantastic stuff with great antioxidants and, you know, grape juice if you really want the resveratrol. But you'd actually have to have a ton of grapes before you get enough resveratrol to contribute to the nutrients that you think you're getting. It's just nonsense. And I mean, honestly, I'm not being judgmental here. If you'd have you know, thrown that at me sort of 8.5 years ago before I quit the booze, it would have made me just really cross. And I was just completely in denial. And it simply would have made me go and have, you know, a whole bottle of Sauvignon, you know, telling myself that a glass of red wine is good for the heart. It's absolute nonsense. And yeah, you have to be open and ready to be able to hear this information. You can't otherwise. But with guests like the one I have coming up, it makes it a little bit more possible, I think, to open your eyes, because we are so constantly told that, oh yeah, but you know, don't overdrink, but one glass is good for you. No, it really isn't. And it was very refreshing for me when I first did this interview a while back with Dr. Anya Topiwala. She's the clinical lead on this study. She's also a psychotherapist, so she really knows her stuff. And when we did the interview, it was in response to another piece that Dr. Anya Topiwala had published, which was again similar topic around alcohol and aging, and they'd done this study that showed how the telomeres work, the little markers of aging. So you'll hear all of that in the piece, but bear in mind that it was recorded a while ago. But literally this week, Dr. Anya Topiwala has been part of this study that, as I say, the headline is, however much you drink, you're at risk of dementia. So even one glass will contribute to the increased risk of dementia. Now, it's worth adding that, you know, it's not just dementia, is it? It is sadly linked to just about every other illness as well. There isn't anything that is improved by drinking, let's put it that way, unless you perhaps need a wound cleaning, then alcohol might be good for that. But ultimately, it's linked to every different type of cancer there is, and just any kind of inflammation in your body, all the gut health problems, the anxiety, the depression, everything is exacerbated by alcohol. I am not stating that alcohol causes those illnesses, though that might be up for debate. But what I am saying is, if you have low-level illness, chronic illness or whatever, and you're drinking alcohol, it will exacerbate the problem. And why aren't we told this? You know, I just find it so frustrating I frustrate myself that I was in denial for so many years. And really, the truth of it is, what we should just be talking about is how amazing life without alcohol is. That's really what we should be focusing on, because my only regret, as you will have heard me say so many times on this show, my only regret is not doing this sooner. That really is the only regret. So just before we go into this interview that I want to run for you again, just a quick reminder of, the importance of connection. I just really want to stress that, because I think if you are early days of quitting the booze, if you've made this decision, but you're early days, then, it can feel really hard if you're doing this on your own. And so get connected, come and join us in the Sober Club. It's low cost, it's high value, it's an amazing community, it's a well-being community. We focus on well-being, so it doesn't matter if you're day one or you've been sober for 10 years, we talk about it all, and we hopefully we're there to inspire people. Even though they've been sober for years, they want to start thinking about leveling up their nutrition or their mindset, or they want to think about doing some meditation, or they want to look into angel cards. All kinds of things we cover on our in our Sober Club community. So check it out, thesoberclub.com. And then just to mention, for those of you that have quit the booze, and you're now at the stage where you're thinking, actually, I'd really like to support others in their journey, then we'd love to have you check out the Sober Coach training that I offer. It's truly holistic. It really is. We go through every single aspect. We're not just supporting people to quit alcohol. We're supporting them to be able to live a life they don't need or want to escape from. And one of the incredible benefits that comes from sobriety, of course, there's all the stuff you would expect. You do get the clearer skin, the shiny hair, the better sleep, the more energy, all of that stuff that you would expect, of course. But you also get to start to care about yourself. And that's huge. So many people just say, I can't believe that after all these years, I can actually like myself. I can actually have some self-esteem. It's a massive thing. Most people are, they're kind to everyone else, but they're not very kind to themselves. And once you quit alcohol, there is this magical thing that happens where you're actually able to start to have some respect for yourself. You start to trust yourself when you get sober. I think it's very hard to trust yourself otherwise, because, when alcohol gets in the way, it's addictive. It tends to come first ahead of everything else. That's why when you quit, you become just a nicer person, quite honestly. I really believe that. You become a better parent. It's the best parenting hack you'll ever find. A better partner, a better friend. You're kinder to everyone and you're kinder to yourself. I mean, there's a bit of work to be done along the way. You have to think about the forgiveness part, both for yourself and others. But ultimately, the change in you, typically every aspect of your life, is absolutely huge. Got to put the work in, and that's what we do as sober coaches. We can support people through all these different pieces. So if that is something that you're interested in, I run regular webinars. So check out thesoberclub.com and have a look at the page about becoming a sober coach, or you can just drop me a message. I'm very easy to find across social media at Janie Lee Grace. And also, so that's if you want to become a sober coach, but also if you're still early days and you're still thinking about quitting alcohol, again, reach out, message me. Even if you don't want to join the Sober Club, tell someone you're doing this, because when you're trying to go it alone, it can be really tricky. It tends to be you and the voice in your head, and the wine witch will pop up for sure and will tell you, just quit next week. You've had a busy day. You've had a tough time at work, the kids, whatever. So, you deserve a drink. So start your abstinence in a couple of weeks or whatever. It's just you and the voice in your head. When you get connected and you're able to speak with other people who've been there, done it, got the t-shirt, that's the key. Or you're able to connect with a sober coach who will literally hold you accountable. That's when things can change. And, it doesn't have to take long for you to start to feel better. I've actually had clients who will say to me, I feel a bit nervous because it's going so well. I feel nervous that it's not been hard for me. Is something going to tip up? Well, No, not necessarily. It may be that you're absolutely ready. You're done drinking. Most of us, by the time we finally quit, have drunk enough for, several lifetimes. And sometimes it's that you're ready. You're ready to do this. Thank goodness the light has come on. And it does not have to be hard, but you do have to lay a few foundations. You do have to get the nutritional piece right. You do have to get your mindset right. You do have to know what you're focusing on. The top tip I've given so many times is, focus only on what you're gaining. Never use the phrase give up. I won't let anyone use that phrase. There is nothing to give up, nothing at all. You're only gaining. So focus on everything you're gaining, make that commitment, set your intention, and then get connected, get some support, have someone there who is going to become, or preferably a whole group of people who are going to become your cheerleaders. So I hope you enjoy the rerun of this interview.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
If you see the letters AIDA, do you immediately think of the opera by Verdi? AIDA is also an advertising acronym for those iconic Mad Men days. A is for attention, I is for interest, D is for desire, A is for action. This process is a timeless truism for making a sale. Fortunately, if your product or service is health-related, we can offer you guaranteed access to a global audience with a high interest in health, healthy lifestyle and contemporary well-being. UKHealthRadio.com has a regular monthly audience of around 1.5 million health-conscious people. And Health Triangle, its award-winning monthly magazine, has around 20,000 paying subscribers. Find out more about both at ukhealthradio.com. Let's all put health first.
Hey, are you tired of the irritation you get down there from pads and other bladder weakness products? Tena Sensitive Care Pads are the first ever bladder weakness pads enriched with a skin comfort formula. The skin-friendly layer in combination with the soft, 100% breathable materials helps protect intimate skin from irritation. And as always, you have triple protection from leaks, odor, and moisture. Gynecologist tested and dermatologically approved by the Skin Health Alliance. Look for Tena Sensitive Care Pads with the skin comfort formula online and in stores now.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Well, many of you will have heard me talk on this podcast regularly about studies that come out in the media, and we get to see the headlines, and sometimes we look at the actual study. And for so many years, we've all been seeing these studies that tell us that alcohol is good for us. And usually at the bottom of the piece, it will say, oh, in moderation. But obviously, we don't notice that bit. And you'll have heard me say millions of times that it's what kept me stuck for years and years, reading these pieces that in fact alcohol was good for you, a glass of red wine or any of that nonsense. But I was just amazed and delighted this week to find that researchers from Oxford Population Health have published results from a new genetic-based analysis that suggests that alcohol directly accelerates aging by damaging DNA in telomeres. And the findings are published in Molecular Psychiatry. This was across the press earlier in the week. And I couldn't believe it. Finally, something that tells it like it is, and not only tells it like it is, about aging, which is, of course, something that I've been talking about for ages. I've long said, that ditching the booze is the best anti-aging secret ever, and I hold to that. So I'm really delighted that my guest is senior clinical researcher, Dr. Anya Topiwala from Oxford Population Health. Anya, thank you so much for agreeing to be part of this. I really appreciate it.
Oh, pleasure. Thanks for asking me.
And you were the study lead on this piece, and I want to talk about it in detail. But just before we do that, just before we opened up the microphones, I was saying that, I was asking you about studies generally, and apparently you've done quite a few that have told it like it is, as it were.
Yes. So my primary interest, I'm a psychiatrist by background, is the effect of drinking on the brain and on memory function. And we've done quite a few studies, because as you mentioned, the narrative was always, yes, okay, if you drink a lot of alcohol over long periods of time, that was bad. But, you know, maybe a glass of red wine a day is good for your brain. And actually, we haven't found that at all across two or three studies now, where we've shown that even really quite small amounts of drinking is associated with harmful brain volumes and worse memory decline.
So yeah. Is it actually linked to Alzheimer's, or would that be too strong to say?
So we haven't looked at Alzheimer's per se as yet. We've done a lot with brain imaging, which is actually more sensitive.
Right.
You can pick up more subtle changes years before the memory symptoms. And we found that more drinking is literally smaller brain volumes. So just a smaller brain size. And actually, the week before last, we published showing that drinking was associated with higher iron in the brain, which in turn is linked to Alzheimer's. And we were seeing results at only 7 units of drinking a week. So, you know, 2 large glasses of wine, we started to see effects a week. So not much.
Interesting. Isn't that interesting? So if you've done a fair bunch of these kind of studies, you must feel as frustrated as I do that the majority of what we see in the mainstream press is, unless that's just my perception, we tend to see these studies that say, oh, it's good for you. I mean, I read one the other day, and I'm trying to remember where it was, where the study was done, that said alcohol is good for you as long as you're over 40, or some kind of absolute nonsense.
Yeah, that was a study 2 weeks ago. You're right. It was published in The Lancet, very good journal.
Yes, that's right. Which
it didn't look at actually brain outcomes and mental health outcomes, which is my primary focus. But I think that's one of the reasons we've done this genetic analysis, because especially for more sort of moderate drinking levels, there are loads of other factors that are probably responsible and I think causing these spurious protective effects. So to give you an example, so the kind of people that drink moderately are better educated,
probably eat
higher
better,
earners, eat better, exercise more, do everything else in their lives is probably healthier apart from the drinking.
Exactly.
And all those factors mean that their brains are healthier, for instance.
Yeah. So they're healthy despite the alcohol. Exactly. They've lucked out, but not because of it.
It looks like it's protective, but that's probably just a spurious, that's my belief, that it's a spurious protection. And actually, as I said, all the imaging studies we've done, it looks like it's harmful.
Right. Wow. I mean, honestly, with that, armed with those studies, it must feel very frustrating for you when you constantly, I mean, just, yeah, I know we're going slightly off track for a moment, but I just find it fascinating the level of marketing that we have thrown at us the whole time. You know, of course it's legal. Of course it's part of our society. Of course it's part of our culture. But for God's sake, you can't buy a birthday card for a 21-year-old boy, without it having a picture of booze on. I mean, you just can't.
No, absolutely. And like you mentioned at the beginning, you know, we've all got what you call a, you know, selective bias.
Yes.
We see the one out of even 100 studies showing that the red wine, the glass of red wine is good for us. We love to believe it.
Yeah.
But I just don't think it's borne out with the evidence personally.
Yeah. And of course, there was also a piece this week in the press about the effects of lockdown drinking, which was really shocking, actually. Mm. Just the fact that the goddamn, you know, off licenses were all left open and the gyms closed. I mean, what did they think was going to happen, right?
Yes, exactly.
That was really sad, actually, that you know, when they really look at the knock-on effect of that.
And we haven't captured it all yet, I'm sure.
So just tell us a bit about your work then. You know, what kind of stuff do you do? Is it all studies across different health topics, or how does it work?
So my work, more recent work, has been very large samples using brain imaging and memory tests, and I've had a particular focus of interest on alcohol because so many people do it. And like you say, the studies have been really conflicting and this so-called protective effect, and thinking about, you know, what I know about alcohol and how it works.
Yeah.
I just didn't believe it. You know, we know it's a toxin. It literally kills brain cells. I just couldn't quite believe there was a protective effect. And I thought this is a sort of topic which merits further investigation with different methods, you know, brain imaging, genetics, like some of these more sophisticated methods to try and get to the bottom of the question.
Yeah. Well, I'm so glad you've done this work. And what's really interesting about this one then is that you know, it's basically saying that the findings could implicate alcohol with age-related diseases. So just tell us a bit about this particular study then. So what does it mean if it's a genetic-based analysis? Exactly what does that mean?
Yeah, so we looked at the links between how much people were drinking and the length of what you call telomeres. So
yeah,
as we grow and get older, the cells in our body have to divide. And in that process of dividing, they have to copy the DNA. And each time the DNA is copied, it gets slightly shorter, just a quirk of the copying process. So the length of these telomeres gives you an idea of aging. So mm-hmm. what we call is like a marker of biological age. And as these things get shorter, you increase your risk for things like Alzheimer's disease, heart disease, cancers.
Yeah.
So the shorter they are, the worse.
And our telomeres, is it a bit like the sort of neuroplasticity of the brain? You know, can we kind of repair a little bit, or is it a case of once you've shortened it, that's it?
So I can't say for definite with the effect of drinking, but so in babies or in fetuses, there's a repair mechanism.
Right.
But by adulthood, most of our body cells, there's no, that repair mechanism is lost.
Mm.
So I can't think of a way, well, at least that I'm aware of, in which that could be repaired.
Mm. The good news, though, of course, on a side note, is that the liver, until it gets too far, is really good at repairing. So it's never too late to ditch the booze.
No, exactly. And you're trying to reduce your risk of this stuff getting worse.
So, yeah, exactly.
And the other thing that we found was the dose was important. So the dose of alcohol. So the more you drank, the worse it was. So even reducing what you're drinking is probably going to benefit you.
Yeah. Okay. So telomere, how we say it, telomere, you say it, is this indicator of biological aging. And once that they're too short, the cells can't divide. I think I understand that correctly. So in this analysis, you how many participants were there, and how did you gather the participants? Literally from a sort of bank of DNA, is that how it worked?
So no, the study is called the UK Biobank, which is a huge study of middle-aged UK individuals from the UK. There's a whole team, and it's not just me, that they've done all the hard work. I got the easy job. So we looked at just under 250,000 of these people who had telomere measurements on their blood sample, and who also had information about their drinking, all sorts of other factors that we took into account, you know, how much they exercised, what they ate, whether they smoked, other health conditions to take into account. Mm. And so we did two types of analysis. So we just looked at the sort of, used the more standard approach, where we looked at how much they were drinking and the telomere length. And then the other aspect was the genetic analysis. And the reason for that was what we were talking about earlier, because there are all these different factors that could be different in drinkers versus non-drinkers that may be important, and it's very difficult to take account of all of them.
Yeah,
we use the associations between genes that predispose you to drink more and the telomere length, and that gets around some of these problems, some of these other factors. And so if you get an association, you can be more confident that it's the alcohol causing the telomere shortening rather than something else that we haven't taken account of.
Mm. I want to go back to the findings of the study in a moment, but tell me a bit more about these genes that predispose you to drinking more. What do you mean by that?
So there are genes that if you took a group of people, there are certain genes that mean those people would drink more on average than other people if they have them. So to take an extreme example, if you think about Southeast Asians, there is a gene that predisposes people to have a flush reaction if they drink alcohol. You may have seen them. So if they literally have a drink or two, they go red, they feel sweaty and unwell. Mm-hmm. So people who have that gene tend to drink less alcohol because they get very unpleasant
effects. Doesn't make them feel well.
Mm. Exactly. So in Europeans, we don't have that an extreme reaction, but there are a number of other genes that have smaller effects that if you have them mean you might be more likely to drink more or less.
Mm, that's very interesting. Tell me about, I read in your study where you said the most, it was written, the most influential genetic variant in the MR analysis was ADIHR, an alcohol metabolism gene.
ADH1B.
Oh, sorry.
That's all right. Yeah, it's just the name of the gene in Europeans that explains the most of drinking.
Okay.
So, and it's a gene that affects how we break down alcohol in our bodies.
Ah, okay.
So
interesting.
We don't completely understand it. The component of alcohol that does the damage probably is ethanol.
Ethanol, yeah.
And so that gets broken down to this nasty chemical called acetaldehyde in the body, and then that gets broken down too. So that acetaldehyde is not nice. We don't like it. Doesn't make us feel good. So that gene affects the speed at which the ethanol is broken down.
So in other words, some people effectively break it down quicker than others and
exactly
more effectively.
And somehow that affects how much we drink. I don't know if that means we those people feel subtly worse when they drink, or maybe they get worse hangovers, or something that we don't understand means that they tend
and I'm guessing it's different in men and women as well because of how our bodies are made up. Is that linked at all?
So really? Men and women definitely metabolize alcohol
differently,
but that, as far as I understand, that's more about how the ethanol gets distributed in our body.
Yeah,
because women have more fat than men, so it sort of, we get a higher level for the same amount of drinking.
Yes.
So it's slightly different, but there certainly are differences between men and women.
Right. I mean, even as we talk about this, what's laughable is, why the hell would we do this to ourselves?
Yes.
You know, even just having this conversation about, oh, well, you might break down the poison slightly faster than I might. What the hell? How about not having the poison? Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyways, just back on your study then, just tell us a little bit about what you found then in the observational analysis, because I know you said that there was a significant association between the higher alcohol intake and the shorter telomere length. So I think I read that you said, compared with drinking less than 6 units of alcohol a week, so that, as you said, you mentioned this would be 2 large glasses of wine. It was associated between 1 and 2 years of age related change on telomere length. So does that mean over a couple of year period, the telomeres would shorten?
So we can't say how long, what the period would be, because we just had a snapshot of people's drinking at one time point. So it's difficult to say, but we're trying to estimate and sort of give people an idea of how big the effect was. So people that were drinking more than 17 units a week had shorter telomeres than those that were drinking less than 6 units.
Mm-hmm.
And then the people that were drinking more, the effect was greater. And those who had a diagnosis of alcohol use disorder, so more severe end of the spectrum, the effect was even greater.
Yeah.
So it seems to be the higher dose of alcohol you have, the worse for the telomeres. And
right.
We tried to estimate, yeah, how did that association relate to that we see with aging? So as I mentioned, as we age, those telomeres get shortened, and we're saying that it's about equivalent to 1 to 2 years.
I see. Aging, as it were. Yeah,
exactly.
I get it. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. So really what this study is saying then, that, you know, even a small amount of alcohol consumption is going to effectively damage these telomeres, which could result in, you know, aging more quickly or having or living less. That's it in a nutshell, right?
That's what we're hypothesizing, that we're suggesting that alcohol is shortening these things and is putting you at risk of age-related diseases like Alzheimer's or cancers.
Yeah. Interesting. Now, what I also found interesting was that most of the participants in the study were currently drinking when they were observed, when they did the study. 3% had never been drinkers, and 4% had been drinkers in the past.
Yes.
What's the relevance of that?
So we were actually quite shocked, because this is not, I said to you, this is a group from the population, but this is not your average, if I just randomly selected 500,000 people from the street.
Mm.
This is a group of quite relatively healthy people very middle class, you know, educated because they signed up for a research study. So the first thing is that the rates of drinking was just so high. We were quite shocked. And actually, you know, more than half the sample were drinking over what the current guidelines are. But sorry, you asked about the relevance of, so the question with these studies, and that was something I hadn't mentioned before, is that what are you going to use as the reference group? And so that's another reason why perhaps some of these other studies have shown protective effects of moderate drinking. Because if you choose your reference, if you're comparing the never drinkers or the non-drinkers, and then you look at the moderate drinkers, there might be this something called a sick quitter effect. So it may be that some of those people that don't drink now used to be extremely heavy drinkers.
Yes, exactly. So they've still got the residue.
Health problems. And that's why they stopped drinking.
Makes sense.
And so therefore they do worse on the other outcomes. And so it looks like moderate drinking.
Get it.
If you, so we wanted to distinguish people that had never drunk, had previously drunk, and then were drinking the different amounts currently.
Right.
So that we could sort of try and tease out those effects.
Interesting. I mean, that would be, I mean, I would be really interested to know whether someone, you know, in my position, for example, someone who did drink too much for many goddamn years, you know, before I wised up, but now, you know, obviously doesn't drink at all, whether I have managed to, you know, stop this in its tracks, as it were. I mean, I'm hoping I have. I certainly feel better and I certainly feel younger.
Well, it's difficult to say that from this study, but certainly from what I know of the brain imaging studies. So looking at, there is some evidence that in previously very heavy drinkers, they, you can reverse to some degree the brain changes and the memory loss if you stop drinking. So certainly... Yeah. I mean, that is suggestive that it's not too late.
Amazing. Amazing. What else can I ask you, or what else can you share with us that you that you found? I mean, I'm just thrilled to bits that you've done this study, actually. I really am. I think it's great. Tell us anything else that you found that seems important.
I think just I'd emphasize that, you know, using the two different approaches and having consistent results across them is much more persuasive. That it is the alcohol causing the damage. And as we said, it's really tricky to do these alcohol studies. There's so many other factors to take into account. And so, we were very pleased that we had consistency of results. It's more convincing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I know it's not your remit, it's not your within your job title, but how can we get the medical profession to take this on board? Because, you know, there's anyone listening to this podcast will know that one of the things that I get so frustrated by is, again, what kept me stuck for years, you know, feeling brave enough to say to a GP, you know, obviously I'd go for something else. And then I'd feel brave enough to say, actually, do you know something? I'm a bit worried about my drinking, actually. And the answer would always be, well, how much are you drinking? Well, obviously I lie. I mean, obviously everyone lies. They know you lie. So I'd say, well, you know, 2-3 glasses a night. And the answer would always be, well, have an alcohol-free day. Sounds normal. And you'd go off again thinking, oh, thank God for that. And you'd go back to your, you know, however many units a week, which is way over what anybody would recommend. And the reason is, as we all know, they're drinking too, the majority of them, number one. And number two, they don't know what to do with you. If you are clearly alcohol dependent, then that's different. They're going to hopefully help you find alcohol services or rehabilitation. But if you are what, you know, the term we now use is a grey area drinker. You're drinking way more than you should be drinking. And as your study shows, this ain't going to be good for you. This is not going to be good for the economy or for the NHS or for anybody else. So how can we get through to the medical profession?
It's very difficult. Well, I'm a consultant psychiatrist as well. So
I've got
two hats. But I think speaking.
I'm thinking more of GPs who are often the first line of contact.
Yes, I think, well, I'm hoping that, you know, our work and others that is emerging is, you know, we're really going to be changing perception for not just the public, but for medical profession as well and GPs alike. That actually,
I mean, am I right about this or not?
I'm hoping it's changing. I think for a long time, and I think a lot of these studies citing a protective effect have not helped.
No, absolutely not.
And I'm hoping that slowly we're changing the perception of medical professionals as well. I think it often gets missed. I think in, or at least my work in hospitals, we don't ask enough about how much people were drinking, and people, like you say, might not volunteer.
Yeah, I mean, it's not only that. I have a friend who was being treated for breast cancer, and this really was quite recently, was literally told, you know, after news like that, you're going to want to go home and have a large glass of wine. Mm. You know, I know they're just trying to be kind, but it's just such awful mixed messaging.
Yes. Well, I think the links with cancer are another sort of interesting area.
Exactly.
I think the public are not aware of the links between alcohol and cancer.
I think we kind of are in our gut, but we don't want to believe it. And everything else, you know, as I say, these constant studies that show it's protective. Really don't help, as you
No,
say.
I mean, it's like you say, it's a wider societal issue, especially, you know, it's completely bound up in our culture, and we celebrate and commiserate
exactly
with drinking, don't we?
Yeah.
So it's really tricky. It won't be a quick change, but, you know, it's happened for smoking. You know, that was also touted as healthy and by the medical profession.
True.
And there's been a sea change, but it does take time and a lot of studies, I think, showing the same thing, probably to start changing opinion on it.
Yeah. So that is interesting then, in your work as a psychiatrist then. I mean, you must have seen the impact of alcohol.
Oh, hugely. I mean, the huge amount of comorbidity between drinking and depression and other mental illnesses.
Yeah. And well, that's another very interesting thing, because, again, you know, it's not talked about enough, that link between depression and anxiety and alcohol, mental illness and alcohol. It's really it's just not talked about. It's seen, you know, if you talk about that, it's seen as if you are, you know, trying to make light of mental illness, and that's not the case. The reality is, you know, no one's saying that it one thing directly causes the other, but it definitely exacerbates it.
Hugely. I think it's just the beginning to be researched, the sort of overlap between the two conditions. And worryingly, at least in mental health services I've worked in, it's a barrier, you know, drinking is a barrier to accessing mental health services. It's often that, you know, if you've got a drinking problem, you're excluded from mental health services, or you're supposed to sort that out first before you get seen.
Well, and then, but then you say that, but then again, I know lots of people, even people within my community in the Sober Club, who have, you know, rocked up to a GP with, you know, depression, anxiety. They're given antidepressants, and they're not asked about their drinking. They're never asked about their drinking. The number of the percentage of clients that I've had who have issues with drinking and they're on antidepressants, I couldn't believe it.
That's the concern, because, like you say, you can't just treat one or ignore the other, because they're so interlinked. You need to sort of try and take a holistic approach and assess and manage both together.
Yeah,
I mean, it's just impossible to do one without the other.
Well, yeah, it's medicating on top of medicating, right? Well, I'm so thrilled you're doing this work.
Thank you.
Fantastic. Well done. It's lovely to have somebody like you who's actually on it. So maybe there will be a change. Let's have a chat in, I don't know, 6 months or a year, and maybe, you know, some of these studies will have actually properly hit home.
Yes, hope so. We're doing our best.
Yeah, you absolutely are. So if anybody wants to sort of have a look at any of this information, where would be the best place for them to go? Where the study's published, or what would be the
absolutely
best?
Absolutely. Well, you can go to my webpage at the University of Oxford, just type in my name, and there should be links to all the studies there. This particular one we've talked about today is in molecular psychiatry. It's all open access.
Mm-hmm. Oh, great. But then some of the other ones you've done are on that
same
link.
Some of the other ones that you can access by webpage.
Okay, I'm going to have a look at some of those, and maybe we'll have you back on and talk about one of the others. I really appreciate it, Anya. Thank you so much. It's really great to chat to you. Thanks for being part of the podcast.
Pleasure. Thanks very much.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
If optimizing your health and well-being is on your to-do list, then let Revive Active, Ireland's number one super supplement brand, help you achieve that in the most convenient and comprehensive way possible. Clean, premium ingredients scientifically formulated to work in synergy to support immunity, energy, joints, heart health, sleep, emotional balance, and more. Benefit from the power, purity, and positivity of our award-winning powder sachets or our therapeutic capsule range. Use code RADIO15 at reviveactive.com and save 15% off today. Super supplements for a super you.
When you vacation with Norwegian Cruise Line, every day is a new day. Get a taste for Barcelona, then savor incredible dining options back on board one day. Connect to ancient history in Athens, and then disconnect completely in our spa another day. Wherever the sea breeze takes you, come aboard and experience a different tomorrow with NCL. Visit ncl.com, call your travel agent, or call 0333-336-1472. Norwegian Cruise Line, Ships Registry, the Bahamas and USA.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Dr. Amya Topiwala there. It was an interview I recorded a while ago for the podcast, but I wanted to rerun it because of that piece that came out in the press just last week saying however much you drink, you are at risk of dementia. So another piece that Dr. Amya Topiwala, another survey that she worked on. I love the fact that she just tells it like it is. We need much more of that in the media, don't we? We need much more people, many more people telling it like it is, telling the truth around alcohol. And we also need many more people raising awareness of the fact that life is better without, and that you can be free from the alcohol trap. It does frustrate me, you know, when I see a lot of celebrities talking about being recovering alcoholics. They talk about being in recovery. They talk about the fact they have a disease. Now, you know, I don't deny that, of course, some people are in that situation, but they're the tales we hear. We very rarely hear about people who do not have a disease. They are not in recovery, they're recovered. We very rarely hear from people like me who was, you know, I wasn't at rock bottom. I didn't ever attend AA. I didn't need to go to rehab, but I was absolutely drinking too much. I was what we now call a grey area drinker, a middle lane drinker. I was not, you know, at rock bottom, but I sure was depleting you know, my own energy, increasing my risk of dementia and every other disease, every other illness, and generally not functioning well. But I've quit. I am recovered. I am free from the alcohol trap. There will be people that argue with that. Well, you're welcome. You know, I absolutely know that I'll never touch another drop. And I'm not in recovery. I'm recovered. And we need to hear more stories like that, more people who know that they've got free from the alcohol trap. And I think that's where the work we do with the Sober Club, that's what we try to do. We try to just talk about positive sobriety. We try and shine a light on that whole holistic picture of sobriety and just how your life can change when you make this choice. It's super exciting. Just no one told me that. They just didn't tell me that. People would say, oh, well, you know, have an alcohol-free day or have a glass of water in between or whatever. I mean, absolute BS nonsense. Very few people, I don't think anyone actually, until I read, you know, the right books, I don't think anyone actually ever said to me, you know, if you're concerned about your drinking, that's a really good thing that you've recognized it, because actually there's a whole world out there of people who've chosen to be sober and they love their life. They can't imagine how great it is. They had no idea that a life outside of alcohol exists. And now they found it. They wouldn't go back for anything in the world. I have said many times, you could pay me £1 million and I would not go back to drinking. Absolutely not. Why would I? I've got far too much self-esteem now to want to go back to having toxic liquids. So that's how strongly I feel about it. Because once you've properly found true sobriety, You don't need toxic liquid anymore, and life is just so much better without. So please check out thesoberclub.com, and I'll see you next time.
You've been listening to the Natural Health and Sobriety Show on UK Health Radio.